and get started in our hearing process, and we will formalize this as soon as we get enough members on the Senate as well. No, the House does have 3 members here, and so but as soon as we get some members on the Senate side. Thank you very much. So our date is a public hearing on Senate Bill 5525, which is the long-term care ombudsman program. So I'd like to invite Ms. Coates, as director of the long-term care program, to join us at the podium. Thank you.
You want my phone?
No, look at this. This is great. I was going to say, thank goodness for big prints. I got my glasses. Glasses in time and all. Oh, okay. I don't need it because it's bigger than I can see.
Yeah. Or, I guess, for me.
Now that I'm
on
the page.
Yeah.
Well,
I had
a moment. Thank you. It's just like you wanted.
Thank you.
Give me some coffee.
We're waiting for you. Ms. Coates?
Well, we'll have Ms. Menthany to introduce the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. As the Chair said, Senate Bill 5525 is the budget bill for the long-term care ombudsman, and Director Coates is here to present.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Meredith Coates, and I am your state long-term care ombudsman, and I direct the Office of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman. And I'm here today with Kathy Walter, who's the program administrator for our agency. She crunches, among her many, many hats, she crunches the numbers for us, and she also produces the data. Also, I'm joined by our budget analyst, our BAM analyst, Blake Johnson. And I would like to also acknowledge the Long-Term Care Advisory Committee monitors the Office of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman for the legislature and the governor, and 4 members of that committee are here with us today. So I would just like to introduce them briefly to you. From the far corner, moving to the right, is Tina Ainsley from Portland, Marian Anderson from Albany, Gene Williams from Tigard, and Tony Landis came over from Bend.
Wow.
And so
I want to welcome all 4 of you, because it's so exciting when we see members of advisory boards involved. It tells us that we are listening to the people from across the state when that happens. So obviously some good things are going on for you to especially come away from Bend, and certainly to come from other parts of the state to be with us. Thank you and welcome.
And it's probably then appropriate that I begin my presentation here today with a quote from the advisory committee report that just was recently sent to members of the legislature and the governor, and is also included in the back of our testimony. It is often difficult for those who have not had an experience as a consumer of long-term care services to appreciate how vulnerable many long-term care residents are as they struggle with multiple impairments dependent on others for most of their basic and personal needs. The fact that a facility is licensed by the state of Oregon does not guarantee that residents will get good care. Many of them experience problems that compromise their rights and their quality of care. It is for this reason that the Office of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman is so important and necessary. Long-term care ombudsmen advocate for residents' rights and work to investigate and resolve a myriad of resident problems, including inadequate care, theft of personal property, involuntary discharges, incorrect billings, medication errors, poor food, and notably guardians who act improperly, which is, I just might add at this point, which does consume a lot of attention in our agency, and those kinds of cases are increasing. So the mission then of the Ombudsman Office is to enhance the quality of life and improve the quality of care, promote the dignity of residents, and protect their rights. And in addition to the small paid staff, which is 8 FTE, what is pivotal in the agency and what is so unique is that we recruit, train, and certify volunteer ombudsmen in communities throughout Oregon and both work to fulfill their mission by identifying and investigating and resolving complaints, monitoring the implementation of all federal laws and rules and policies as they affect long-term care residents, participating in efforts to promote quality of care, and importantly, advocating for system changes that promote and protect the interests of long-term care residents. The agency also offers a volunteer-run friendly visitor program, which in conjunction with providers who identify residents who are lonely or isolated, actually puts a volunteer in a facility to visit with those. And there's been lots of anecdotal information that has proven the value, the therapeutic value of having that consistent friendship. As a single program agency, the Ombudsman Program serves the residents of the 142 nursing facilities, 230 residential care facilities, 201 assisted living facilities, and 1,614 non-relative adult foster care homes. And as I indicated earlier, the volunteers are a very unique part of our service, and they are responsible for 96% of all facility visits.
Let me ask you a question, please, ma'am. So since you're in charge of these different facilities that you have scheduled here, do you, when you see something happening negative to seniors in those properties, do you have an obligation as a result of your position to be a mandated reporter?
Madam Chair, as a matter of policy, yes, we consider ourselves mandatory reporters. And so when we identify, I think what you're referring to is elder abuse, mm-hmm. or gross neglect.
Facilities that are not keeping their places up to code.
Absolutely. And we will, and we'll talk about that even probably more a little later on, but we refer complaints to Adult Protective Services, and then we monitor those complaints for the outcome of those investigations.
There's two reasons I'm asking this, and that is because we don't have a strong inspection program in this state, and you are basically our only eyes to help keep some of these places up. I know on several occasions there's a place over on Gleason that I have been called on several occasions to for residents there when they had not kept the place up, that, you know, in terms of its healthiness and its facilities. And I was wondering, who's in charge of that? I mean, somewhere along the line, somebody should be telling us something. And if we need to pass legislation to make your position a mandated reporter, not just one who acts that way as a result of policy, but that as a mandated reporter, this position would be.
Madam Chair, it gets a little complicated, but for some issues, you know, there are issues that the ombudsman going into a facility would identify and immediately want those issues corrected because they could pose a danger to residents. But there are a lot of situations where the resident may confide in the ombudsman, and when they confide in us and it meets the definition of abuse or neglect, we absolutely will report that. But when it does not, by federal law, we really have to respect, for example, a resident's rights not to be identified with that complaint. And so what we do is we try to get the problem resolved without involving that particular resident. So we do have to be careful sometimes around sort of a mandatory reporter, but I can assure you, if an ombudsman sees something which puts residents in imminent danger, they are trained to do what is necessary to get a response to get that issue addressed, and I can assure you of that. And and so when the ombudsman go into the facilities, I just wanted to sort of talk about that. One of the things that's really important, and I'm going to talk a little bit later on, and what's so key is that regular presence of the ombudsman in the facility to be able to understand what is the normal operation, what is the appropriate operation, and where there may be problems and where those problems may crop up. And part of that comes from the ombudsman spending time knowing the residents, knowing what's going on in that particular building. And that's really kind of key to some of the work of the volunteers.
Manager, Senator Wardley.
Thank you very much. If I may follow up, and good afternoon to... is the volunteer approach, and thank goodness for volunteers, we're very blessed to have the number that we do working in this effort. Is the volunteer approach working, and how do we know that it is? Do we have enough volunteers given the needs out there, the number of beds that exist currently? I'm saying beds, but given the thank you. What does that capacity look like? Where are the needs?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, well, you certainly cut to the chase here because you've really gotten to the nub of everything that I'm going to share with you today. The fact of the matter is I wholeheartedly believe, and I think that our data and the people that will talk to you will reflect that we are effective in being able to get into facilities and work with residents. But we do not have enough volunteers to be a presence, the kind of presence we believe the residents deserve. And that is one of the constant challenges of this program, is having the, and it really gets to the nub of what we're talking about here, but volunteers are very cost effective. They are not free. And what they most require is a commitment of staff for training, support, technical assistance, and an ongoing communication as they work on their cases. And so the staff in the agency and the capacity of the agency in terms of its staff is directly linked to the number of volunteers that the agency can have out there. So the short answer to your question is I believe that we are effective and that we help thousands of people, but we could be more effective.
And so you have 244 volunteers now. How many more would you need in order to be truly effective?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, if I could have my if I could really look at a number, I'd be looking somewhere around being able to get ombudsmen in the larger facilities on a weekly basis, and in the adult foster cares on at least a monthly basis. And I think that I would be looking at about 400 volunteers. 400
additional,
it's about a total of about 400 volunteers somewhere in that neighborhood.
And that's to get to weekly.
Right. And Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, and I was going to talk about this a little later, but one of the things about, and we'll talk about it in the performance measures, is that we'll talk about it more, the difference between optimal and what is adequate. But why weekly visits become important in many facility situations is that the ombudsman work, you identify a problem, you investigate to verify the problem, then you have to engage in what's called resolution of that problem with the facility. It just doesn't end there. And what an ombudsman frequently has to do is that they have to monitor to ensure that the facility has followed up and that they are implementing whatever resolution was agreed upon. And that doesn't happen in a lot of facilities where there's lots of change of staff and the communication may not be as good as it needs to be. And so the ombudsman has to continually facilitate all of that to ensure that the resolutions are true resolutions. And that requires a presence. And so that's why we always talk about how weekly visitations are really optimal in particularly the larger facilities.
One additional question, Madam Chair. Do other states rely on volunteers in the same way as Oregon?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, in Oregon, we have some of the heaviest reliance on volunteers of any state program, just in terms of the responsibility that the volunteers have. They have the same authority as line professional staff do, so they have a fair amount of authority in terms of their accessibility and their ability to access records with permission, et cetera, et cetera. And but we resolve at a rate vis-a-vis other programs. I think we're are we about 25th, I think, in the number of facility beds that we have? There are 52 programs that the federal government oversees, and we are of those. I think Oregon is about 25th in the number of facility beds that we have in the state, and I believe that we're number 23 in the number of complaints that we resolve. And I remembered correctly. and so we're number 23 in the number of complaints resolved, and I think we're number 16 in the number of volunteers. And so all of this is pointing to, and of course the other statistic, of course, is that we rank 50th out of 52 programs in the number of staff to facility beds among those 52 programs. So while that points,
you're number 50 in the nation?
Right, in the number of staff we have relative to the number of facility beds in the state.
What about the region?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure what the region is. Perhaps I can give the source data to Kathy, and maybe she can work that through.
You can just bring it back to us tomorrow. Okay. Look at how, when you look at Washington, Oregon, Idaho, California.
Okay.
Tell us how do we rate among those.
My last question, Madam Chair. We're 50th. How long have we been at that status, 50th?
We seem to have been locked into, Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, at least for the last, I'd say at least three or so years that we have been looking at the federal data, which is on the Administration on Aging website. We have been in that ranking. I know that according to the 2005 data, which is the most recent, we were 50th. The 2004 data, we were 50th. And we can certainly look back at previous years.
That's very helpful. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes. Thank
you. Can you just briefly, and I know maybe you're going to do this later in your presentation, but can you just tell us briefly what happens when you get a complaint from one of your ombudsmen, how that process works?
Madam Chair, Representative Boone, I just need to clarify the question. When an ombudsman receives a complaint,
right,
how it works?
And then what happens?
Well, if we're talking about a volunteer ombudsman in a facility, because we get complaints, we have a toll-free number in the Salem office, and so we receive numerous complaints that come into the office, and we always have a staff person on duty during the week to receive those complaints as they come in. But we also, if an ombudsman in a facility receives a complaint, then what they try to do is verify the complaint, so to try to identify any facts that would support the complaint as it is stated. So in terms of, we are advocates for the resident, but we are impartial in terms of how we look at the data and the facts. And so the ombudsman would then do whatever investigation is necessary to verify the complaint. And then most often what we would do, with the resident's permission, is to try to see whether within the four walls of that facility we could reach some resolution that would accommodate the resident. And that's how we work through it. And, you know, part of the process by which we train our ombudsman, and it gets to some of the issues that I talked about just a few moments ago, is that you try to have a meeting of the minds with, whether it be the administrator, the director of nursing services, the head of social services, whoever it is, in terms of how to resolve that issue. But sometimes you find that the solution sometimes falls apart unless the ombudsman is there to go back and remind them about what was agreed to. And there are complaints, of course, that take on enormous complexity. I alluded earlier to complaints we get increasingly about guardians who are acting improperly. Mm-hmm. And those complaints, we're getting them from court visitors, we're getting them from physicians, we get them sometimes from the facilities, family members, but those usually involve some kind of close encounter with the court system because they are the ones that set up the guardians. So those will take on a path that takes us outside of the facility and to pursue a resolution.
Well, occasionally we hear from your ombudsman, and so what I'm trying to get at is why do we hear from them if there's a process by which there is set up to address these issues? And, I mean, and I know you might not be able to answer that at all, but that's what I'm trying to see, if there's a little bit of a disconnect there, you know, that why would we hear about it if there is a place for the ombudsman to forward the complaint to work with?
Madam Chair, Representative Boone, there could be a couple of reasons for that. There are some complaints for which there is only a legislative solution. And for those complaints, I would say contacting the legislature is probably very appropriate. For example, our office was fielding numerous complaints in 2003 when there was a decision made to cut back Medicaid services. And we were dealing with clients who were having to leave facilities, and there was no clear or appropriate place for them to go. And so there was a lot of frustration built around that. So that would be one subset of complaints that could get your attention.
Okay, well, that helps a lot. Thank you.
And if you have specifics, I would be happy to talk to you about them.
No, go ahead and finish on that.
Because we also tell ombudsmen, if you're having trouble with resolving something, call the toll-free office, speak to a deputy, a professional staff ombudsman, and let's see how we can work it out and get it resolved for the residents. So we give them lots of opportunities. What we've done, so currently the program has 141 certified ombudsmen. We have 70 friendly visitors, and we have 43 recruitment and screening committee members. And those are local committees that actually interview applicants to the program and screen them for recommendation for participating in the program. And what we've done in the appendix on page 47 is we've actually included a breakdown of all of our volunteers by the districts. And also it provides you with an opportunity to see how many facility beds you have in your particular area and what percentage of the total that is. So we try to provide that so that you can get an idea of how our volunteers are dispersed throughout the state. On page 5 is our organizational chart, and I can talk to you about that while you're looking at the chart on page 47. But
Madam Chair, Senator Gordon, before we leave page 47, is there anything about the ratio of volunteers to number of beds, number of people on this page that you would highlight for us? In any of those counties, are they struggling, for example, given the limitations with number of volunteers? What are the issues within the unpack the numbers for us.
Madam Chair, Senator Gorley, well, you know, of course, when you look at the volunteers, what you'll see is that there are, for example, a couple of counties where we don't have volunteer ombudsmen. You'll see Klamath Lake, Harney, and Malheur. And so what we do in that situation when we don't have volunteers is professional staff actually goes into those counties. We have a professional staff person that goes quarterly to Harney and Malheur and visits all of the facilities in Harney and most of the ones in Malheur. And we have another professional staff person that's going into the Klamath area about every other month to respond to complaints and to visit facilities that don't have volunteers. So when you look at all of these numbers, there are, you know, there are some counties that you know, the volunteers are always fluctuating in terms of the numbers in any particular county because we're always recruiting. The committees are always recruiting. So if you look at Multnomah County, it's no secret that they have the most ombudsmen, and they have almost 21% of the beds in the county. Now, of course, most of the ombudsmen in Multnomah, and when you look at how many facilities we have to cover in that county, 29 is probably not near enough. But we still have the majority of ombudsmen in the place where we have the majority of facility beds. And some counties may have a few more ombudsmen than their numbers. For example, I'm looking at, for example, in Douglas County right now, we have 6 certified ombudsmen. And Douglas County has, you know, 2.64% of all the beds. Well, that probably gives Douglas County some very, very good coverage in terms of the kind of coverage that I talked about earlier. So in that particular county, they probably have a larger percentage of their facilities receiving regular visitation than you might see in Multnomah County, even though Multnomah County has more ombudsmen. Would you like me to go on, Senator Gorley?
No, your explanation is very helpful in unpacking and understanding the numbers, what's behind the numbers. Thank you.
Returning to page 5 of the presentation, and that's our organizational chart, and I guess in looking at the organizational chart, what I wanted to leave you with is that we have 4 professional staff persons that are called Deputy State Long-Term Care Ombudsmen. And each of them supervises multiple counties. And as you see in the organizational chart, you'll see one has 7 counties, one has 13, one has 8, another one has 8. And within those counties, each one supervises an average of 35 certified ombudsmen within those counties. And those deputies are responsible for training and certifying those volunteers, providing them continuing education, providing them monthly support meetings. We also, as I indicated earlier, those deputies staff a staff person on the end of the phone in our office every day of the week, and so they're providing an enormous amount of support to those volunteers. And in addition, each of those deputies has their own caseload of cases, frequently some of the more difficult to resolve cases, and they're also doing facility visits in areas where we may not have as good a volunteer coverage as we'd want to have. So it's a rather full plate, and I just sort of wanted to set that out for you so you sort of have an idea of how the structure of the program and really how it operates. The agency has 8 key performance measures that really try to show our progress toward the agency's strategic goals. And the strategic goals are identifying, investigating, and resolving complaints made by on behalf of residents, establishing a regular presence in long-term care facilities, ensuring that consumers, the public, facility staff, and agencies are aware of the Ombudsman program and services, and advocating for system changes on behalf of long-term care residents that promote and protect their rights and interests. And so, turning to page 8, those key performance measures, and I'm going to be talking about each of them in detail, are the percentage of non-referred complaints that are partially or fully resolved, our average initial response time to those complaints, the time it takes us to close those cases, the percentage of nursing facilities visited once a quarter, the percentage of assisted living and residential facilities visited at least once a quarter, the percentage of adult foster care homes visited at least once a quarter, the percentage of the number of requests for assistance from consumers, the public, facility staff, and agencies, and the percent of customers rating their satisfaction with the agency's customer service as good or excellent. So the first three measures address the goal of identifying, investigating, and resolving complaints. And in federal fiscal year 2006, and I might just indicate that the reason we use the federal fiscal year is that our program emanates from the Older Americans Act, and it is a mandated program under the Older Americans Act, and so we report to them in federal fiscal years. So a federal fiscal year 2006 is October 1 of 2005 through September 30th of 2006. And during that time, the agency worked on 4,445 complaints, and we closed 3,714 of them. Of those closed, 79% were non-referred complaints. And by that, I mean complaints that the agency responded to that were not referred to another agency for investigation.
Ms. Cody, 4,000 doesn't, when you talk about the number of complaints, I'm trying to frame in my mind whether that's good or bad, and I don't have any other number to compare it to. And this is a difficult question to ask, but what is the potential of the people that you deal with, say, on an annual basis, so I can compare that 4,000 complaints? In other words, reduce it to a percentage, and that way I know whether you're doing a really good job or a really poor job. Did I frame the question okay for you?
Chair Carter, Representative Garrard, I guess I'm not sure how to respond. I mean, how to respond. The universe is, when you look at individuals who are in long-term care facilities, they are impaired, and that's the reason they're there. They may have cognitive, physical, or combination. And so, you know, in terms of whether the number is good or bad, you know, if we relate to other programs in the nation, we're 23rd, you know, we're 25th in the number of beds, so we're 23rd in the number of complaints, which suggests that we have, relative to other programs, we have a few more complaints per beds than other programs in the nation. But in terms of how to compare that in the state as to whether it's good or bad, you know, we put ourselves out there to residents, and part of it is trying to work with them to identify issues that concern them. And it's really hard for me to say, well, should it be 10,000 or should it be, you know, 2,000? And so I'm sort of at a loss as to give you sort of more information, but if you keep pushing me, you know, we can perhaps get something out here that...
I'm assuming that each person is one, but each person has relatives or friends. When a complaint is registered, who normally calls you? Is it the patient or is it an associate? Or do you cover that later on and I'm jumping ahead?
Madam Chair, Representative Garrod, I do. But I will just, and we'll just cover it now, and then when we get to it later on, we'll just skip it. But the issue is that there is a chart on page 10, and we talk about our complainants. And 40% of our complaints come from the residents themselves.
Okay.
And then we have 34 coming from family or friends. 10% come from the facility. 2% come from other social service agency, and 9% come from the ombudsman themselves when they're in the facilities and they identify a problem that may be related to not attached to a specific resident. So that's the source of complaints. And so the universe is the residents in the long-term care facilities. The real issue here is that the complaint has to be buyer on behalf of a resident. So if, for example, a family member came to us and they said, my mother doesn't like her roommate and we want a roommate change and the facility is resisting that, our responsibility would not be to that family member necessarily to make that change happen. We would go and visit that resident, and we would interview that resident and find out what that resident thinks and feels about their roommate. And there have been occasions where the resident said, I wish my daughter would just get out of this. I really like my roommate, and we have become fast friends. We dine together every night, and I don't want anything, this roommate going anywhere. But the daughter is saying, you know, has a personality clash with the roommate, or thinks that the TV is too loud, not recognizing that her mom has a hearing impairment and it's just not bothering her. So I guess in trying to flesh it out a little more for you, our complaints really, we are resident directed to the extent that residents can direct us in terms of what we try to facilitate their own decision making. So our complaints are focused around their needs and their preferences. And part of that is to empower them in an environment where frequently they feel very disempowered.
You responded to the intent of my question. Thank you.
I think the follow-up, I think that if you would look at that you have 42,000 beds and only 4,000 complaints, you think, what's the big deal? That's not big.
Madam Chair, for every one of those residents that posited a complaint with us, I can tell you it's a very big deal. Mm-hmm. Time weighs heavy on their hands. Many of these people are in the final stages of their lives. They are searching for some level of quality in that life. And to the extent that having an issue that's important to them resolved, it's very important. So, yes, in the scheme of things, one could say, well, there's this many beds, this is the complaints. You know, I would also say to you, if our presence was enhanced, one of the things about our program is the more we enhance our presence, the greater the number of complaints. And it sort of gets to Representative Garrod's issue, is that the ombudsmen do have somewhat of a sentinel effect in facilities, that their presence does create, you know, a certain level of accountability. But there's also, on the flip side of that, their very presence, their very ability to provide access to a resident gives a resident an avenue that they didn't otherwise have. So the complaints will percolate out. So the greater our presence, the greater number of complaints, which doesn't indicate a failure, and it doesn't even indicate that a facility is necessarily bad because there's an ombudsman with complaints generated from the residents. People have problems wherever they go, but in some environments, the problems are in fact caused by the facility. In other cases, there are other exterior sources of those problems. And I would just add that one of the things that is one of our very most difficult and challenging areas for problems is with family members. who are at war with one another, and they are exhibiting their ill feelings through their parent in the facility. And those are some of the issues that cause us the most angst, that are the most delicate, require the most compassion and sensitivity, but are the most exhausting. Absolutely exhausting. Mm-hmm. But there is a growing number of those kinds of complaints. The other, when we talked about non-referred complaints and that 79% were non-referred, I do want to point out, and this gets to Senator Gordley's earlier, I guess it was Senator Chair Carter's earlier issue around, last year, for example, we referred 665 complaints to Adult Protective Services. And these were referrals based on that there was some indication that there were issues around abuse or neglect. And so that was those were the numbers that we referred. And on one of the things that we've done on the appendix on page 48 in this presentation is that we just took a sample of the kind of complaints that come into the office. And we looked at last month, and I just sort of put them together. So in part, it's to just give you some insight into all of the different kinds of complaints and fact patterns that come into the office. And as wild as your imagination could possibly be, we've seen a fact pattern probably like that come through our doors. But it's just, you know, although there are some complaints that are more frequent than others, there's just an amazing diversity in all of the kinds of complaints that we get coming into the office. And following up on the appendix on page 48, we also have an appendix on page 58, which just shows you the complaints that we closed in federal fiscal year 2006. And just gives you an idea by the complaint categories that the Federal Administration on Aging has us report to them on, how all of our complaints broke down. And so it just gives you a little bit more information in terms of all of the various categories of complaints that we've been called upon to work on in the previous year. And turning to page 10 of the presentation, we have a few charts, one of which we've already reviewed, which is sort of the complainants that come into the program. But we also, another part of what we do is we provide a lot of consultations to people that call the office. And in the last federal fiscal year, we provided just under 1,000 consultations to people. And the interesting issue is that most people are calling us about information on facility placement. They want to know what a facility's complaint history is. They want to know information on the facility that they're looking at. Or else they're calling us on guardianship and conservatorship issues. We actually even provide technical assistance to attorneys who are working on guardianship and conservatorship issues on behalf of residents in long-term care facilities. Most elder law attorneys are more accustomed to representing the person bringing the guardianship than the person over whom the guardianship is being brought. And then in last federal fiscal year, the third area where we had lots of consultations was around Medicare. You know, that was the Medicare Part D and the implementation, and we had lots of people who didn't have complaints so much is that they had questions and they needed information and they needed direction. And so we fielded a lot of those kinds of complaints during that time. And in the upper right-hand corner of page 10, we talk about sort of our complaints, and as you see, that 79% are not referred, and that about 18% are referred to Adult Protective Services. And that just shows the breakdown of sort of where our complaints go if they're not being responded to by the agency.
Let me just go back to a few minutes ago. My question was truly a budgeting question when I say, so you have 42,000 beds and only 3,000 complaints. And what's the big deal? And when I want to make clear it was not what's a big deal, because if I have a complaint, I have a complaint. I don't care if 5,000 others don't.
Okay.
I can see that to be very important. I want you to know I wasn't...
Right on, Madam Chair.
I wasn't meaning to be callous, but in terms of a budget, if you were asking for another employee, the budget committee would probably say, well, Ms. Coakley, we don't see you need another person. You have 42,000 beds and you only have 4,000 complaints. Why does that justify another person? So that was a kind of budget question that I was asking you.
And Madam Chair, what I would say is, and I referred to it earlier, mm-hmm. is that our program has a certain capacity that is defined by the number of staff and volunteers. You enlarge that capacity by being more of a presence in facilities, by being able to recruit more volunteers into the program, and then you reach out to more of those residents, and complaints will follow.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is that you increase the program's capacity and its ability to offer its services to people who are not receiving those services now.
Right.
Because our population is such is that we have to go to them. Although we get ample phone calls coming into the Salem office, by and large, the way we reach residents, those 40% of our complaints, but by and large, is to be there in the facility, to meet them, to earn their trust, to try to begin to relate to them so that they can feel comfortable. And so that's what it does, is that you sort of you increase program capacity.
Excuse me for a minute. Senator Gordon, you're going to take over. I just need to be excused for a minute. Senator Gordon,
please continue. What I wanted to do is, on page 11, before I got into specific performance measures, on page 11, the chart that is there is not the correct chart that follows the data. So Kathy's just going to give you a whole new page to put in your notebooks for page 11 that just has a new chart. That's the only thing. And the reason that is that apparently it was a computer glitch. The computer did not, the chart that was produced by the computer didn't follow the data, and that's about all I can comment on in terms of the computer's malfunction. So I'll wait until you receive that.
I'm sure I'll put pressure on you. I think everybody's clear, and then I'll follow up with the other one for that.
Thank you. So what this page 11 does is it just tries to encapsulate. We provided a couple of appendices, as you saw, that sort of got to individual complaints. And this chart just attempts to aggregate all of that data by showing you the broad categories where our complaints emanate from, and also to talk about the top five most frequent complaints in the program, which are around medications, around food service, around discharges and evictions. And what I would say is that number is that particular number is a number where staff are frequently involved in those cases. So those 171 cases, many of them have staff involvement, because that's where a resident is being told by a facility that they can no longer stay in that facility. And the resident has certain rights attached to that around having an informal conference and then potentially a hearing. And we are frequently the entity that represents the resident's interests with respect to that informal conference. So very often the deputy or the professional staff person is involved in those category of cases.
Madam Chair? Senator Gordley?
Thank you, Ms. Cody. Looking at the complaint category, gross neglect, and the number 163, what information is behind that category and number? What are we looking at out there around the state in terms of gross neglect and with what consequences for those who were responsible for?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Gorley, those would be residents in a situation where it was not just the neglect that they somehow didn't receive a service, but there was no negative outcome to the resident. These are residents who may not have received a service within the facility to their detriment, such that they are significantly harmed by not receiving that service. And we would report those cases to Adult Protective Services for investigation. And so that is the level of cases, because neglect is on a spectrum, and there are some issues around neglect that the ombudsman routinely handle, which are ones where the resident doesn't receive their hygiene services, for example, which is a common one. But the ombudsman would intervene to ensure that that happens. But the resident may not have been harmed by the fact on a particular day that they didn't receive them, or the resident that in a week didn't receive a shower. You know, those kinds of things may rise to the, if those things are more than a one-time issue and the resident is harmed, they may rise to the level where it is gross neglect and the resident is harmed, in fact, by the occurrence. But a lot of services that residents don't receive are handled by ombudsmen within the facility. And the regulators, quite frankly, are not that interested in sort of technical rule violations unless there is a harm to the resident.
If I may follow up.
Certainly, Senator.
In that category, again, gross neglect, and the number, looking at the number 163, how many different facilities does that represent?
Senator Carter, Chair Carter, excuse me, Senator Gordley, I think that we'd have to look at that. I'm sure we could, Kathy is saying we could get that data to you. I just don't know it offhand, but certainly we can get that for you.
I'd be interested in knowing that and any information that you can provide that tells us if there are patterns of concern, patterns of concern that you are addressing. Again, you know, gross neglect, that's serious. We're talking about the quality of someone's living situation and possible harm to their life. So I do want to know what that looks like statewide, and if there's a pattern that we should be aware of.
And Madam Chair, Senator Gorley, the Seniors and People with Disabilities that is going to be before you soon has their own data beyond what we refer to them as an agency. They have, they should be able to give you some insights into that from their own data, which is much more voluminous than ours, because they are the primary investigating agency for gross neglect and abuse.
I would want the same background information on discharge and eviction. What does that look like?
Madam Chair, Senator Gorley, I'm not so sure that Seniors and People with Disabilities, although they could probably get information from them, because many of their coordinators are asked to be the arbiter at informal conferences around discharges. So they, if they keep records of all of that, we should be able to get some information from Seniors and People with Disabilities. What we can provide you are the ones where we're called upon to participate. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing about this whole issue of involuntary discharge is that many people, if a facility just goes and tells a resident, you have to leave because we don't think we want to care for you, or we can't care for you, some people just say, that must be what I must do, and they just leave, and we never hear about it. And then there are many, and then there are the others that come to us and say, you know, we need help here. And so in giving you the data we have, does not include all the people that are leaving involuntarily from facilities. It is only the ones that call upon us for help.
And I appreciate you making that distinction. And, Madam Chair, what is behind my questions is just a concern, a general concern, that we're looking at categories and numbers, and I'm just conscious that we're always talking about people, mm-hmm. and that we're talking about the human impact of decisions that get made out there that affect people's lives. So that's where I'm coming from, always wanting to understand what's the human impact behind all of this.
Madam Chair, Senator Gordy, I so appreciate that, because I think that in the work that the Ombudsman do, if the Ombudsman, at the point that you stop connecting at that very human level, and at the point that you stop being outraged by things that residents are experiencing, is the point at which you should no longer be doing this type of work, because it's that sense of wanting to rebalance things and to change things for the better that really, really, I think, inspires many ombudsmen.
So, if you don't mind, first of all, I'd like to have your comments back to Senator Gordy, to all of the members, in formal writing, because tomorrow this is a part of the budget that we pass, and so I'd like to have that back and have you move a little more expediently on the key performance measures, because I do want to be able to hear from your members, and if you could give us 15 minutes, and then we take the last 15 minutes to hear from the presenters here, the public here.
So, Madam Chair, is that because you want me to skip right to my policy option packages?
Yes.
Or do you want me to hit the performance measure? In 15 minutes, would you... I'll give it a shot as to what we can accomplish in 15 minutes. And is there a place that you would want... Would you rather me focus on the performance measures or the agency's policy package?
Policy package.
To skip the policy packages.
Members, can I ask you to look at the performance measures, and if you said there are some you see that you think are inappropriate, that we can come back and discuss that. Either we can have them turn it into the emergency board or something of that nature, but I think the policy option package is in order for us to work this budget tomorrow would be a little more prevalent, if you don't mind.
That skips us to page 31 of the budget presentation. And our packages are this. The first package, Policy Option Package 101, is that we have requested a part-time 0.5 FTE, Office Manager 2 position. And the reason we have is that over the years, since 1995, the data demands on our agency have increased exponentially. The Federal Administration on Aging imposed their own reporting system that we have to have special software for. We have to have a consultant that helps us, assist us in producing some of the reports for that. And also, in the years that have since 1995, we also have, with the advent of performance measures, there's an enormous amount of data on all of our program activities that the agency has to maintain, as well as we try to work, in terms of our staff, really focusing on some performance-based management in terms of living and breathing the performance measures. We feel that because you have made them an important part of what you look at, we make it an important part of what we look at. So what this package tries to do is we've been trying to cobble together since 95, a support person who has to look at huge amounts of data coming in from volunteers all around the state, has to look at information coming in from professional staff, has to make sense of it, has to make sure that that we meet all the technical requirements of... Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All the technical requirements of the... federal government, and we've been cobbling together. We've tried volunteers, and lately we've been using a part-time contract employee and now a limited duration employee that goes to the end of this state fiscal year. And without this position, quite frankly, we have no ability to get the data in any kind of timely way, and it is just mounds of data. And we've tried to put in the package, talk to you about the 2,500 cases, the 4,000 complaints, the 14,000 visits. Every bit of this information has to be entered in a database for reporting to the federal government. And we have to keep track of all our consultations, every meeting we have with a family council, every facility survey we participate in, every press release we release, every media contact that we have. Everything has to go into a database so we can report it. And we just have two support staff currently in the office, plus this limited duration position to handle all of not only the professional staff work, but all of the volunteers from around the state. And so this is a position that we really desperately need in the agency to make permanent something that we've sort of cobbled together. And if there are no questions on that package, I'd go to the policy package 102 on page 34. And this really gets to some of the questions that the Chair Carter and Senator Gordley have asked about program capacity. But what we were asking for, or what we are asking for, is two new deputy positions for the agency to be phased in starting in January of 08. So the phase-in would be a 1.5 FTE for 07, increasing to 2.0 FTE for the 09 through 11. And, I sort of just want to point out is that this agency, I became the director in 1989. In 1990, the E-Board gave us 1.5 FTE increase in staff. 0.5 was lost after Measure 5. And so basically we have not had a staff increase in this agency since 1990. And the facility beds have increased by 51% from about 28,000 to about 42,000. We now have, I think, about 39,000 residents in our long-term care facilities. And as I indicated earlier, the deputy or the professional staff ombudsman have a huge plate in terms of all of the support they provide for the volunteers, the training, and the responding to their own caseloads, doing facility monitoring visits, and they're doing it in multiple counties, so they're on the road most of the time. And it is a huge responsibility. And so,
excuse me for a minute, Representative Nathanson.
I'm sorry for interrupting the presentation, but a question is starting to develop in my mind about the workload of this agency, all of the responsibilities, and also the mission. The mission is one of the more tightly defined programs that we review. It's very specific to improve the level of care, et cetera, for Oregon citizens residing in a long-term care facility. But, Madam Chair, it occurs to me we have received from time to time in this session requests to establish an ombudsman for other categories of people who are receiving care or services on behalf of the state. I'm wondering how this agency or this program relates to other programs that do or should have an ombudsman, and how there's an overlap, or how the needs and staffing of one helps support another.
I hope you don't sound. I hope you don't think I'm being flippant when I say this, but they call that lawsuit. Federal government.
Yeah.
In the 80s.
I understand why you're saying that. Thank you. Thank you.
Is that a way of saying that every state is required to have an ombudsman?
I don't know. I can't answer that question. Maybe she can, but I know we were having so many problems of abuse in our state. I mean, it was horrible that the federal government had to step in.
Can you answer Ms. Cote answer Senator Gordley's question?
Well, I know the answer to the question. I was just trying to make sure. I mean, you have to have a long-term care ombudsman. That's a federal requirement.
Madam Chair,
for this particular
Representative Nathanson and Senator Gorby, yes, as a condition of accepting certain Older Americans Act money from the federal government, each state must have a long-term care ombudsman. So each state does have that, as well as Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico. That's the 52.
Right.
And as it relates to other ombudsman programs in the state, there aren't that many in this state. We haven't really, really developed the ombudsman concept much in the state. We do have the governor's advocate for human services office. And we have a children's advocacy office. We have an injured workers and a small business ombudsman. But those are by and large, and of course, the citizen's rep, representative in the governor's office. But our particular program focuses on a very discreet constituency, and that is the residents of long-term care facilities. Does that in any way answer your question?
A short follow-up.
Sure.
Yes, your response did answer my question. We have received suggestions, however, that there be ombudsperson positions created for other constituencies, and there is a need there. I personally would hope that there would be a way that that kind of program could be managed as cost-effectively as possible, and I guess it's my suggestion that if there were an office that took care of this ombudsperson function, there may not have to be separate offices for each kind of constituency. But that's really just brainstorming off the cuff. Thank you.
Thanks.
Madam Chair,
may I follow up on Representative Nathanson's excellent questions? It would be helpful to know what the referral looks like coming from the governor's office, the citizen rep referred to by the representative, and also the governor's ombudsman. What does that relationship look like? How many referrals do you get? You don't have to answer now. You can come back tomorrow.
Madam Chair, Senator Gorby, yes. My sense is that there is, that they do refer. We do receive them from the governor's office, but there isn't a high frequency of referrals, but we do receive them periodically, and we should be able to have those referrals on our database. So we'll.
And then the other question I have about Policy Package 102, given what we know about the workload, what you've shared today and what we've heard in the past, is how did you arrive at the need for two positions?
Madam Chair, Senator Gorby, in 1989, when I assumed this position, I did an analysis of the office, and there were 28,000 beds there, and I, after doing my preliminary analysis, I said there needed to be six field staff doing the job then. And so now, 17 years later, we still have four field staff doing that job. So I went back to my 1989 analysis when there were 28,000 beds, and I said I'd at least like to get there. And I do believe that with two additional deputies, as you can see in where we talk about on page 37, we talk about how we believe we can improve our performance. I think that we could make fairly significant advances in terms of increasing our presence in facilities, because when you get more staff attached to that, right now, as I indicated, we have each professional staff person, 35 volunteer, 1 to 35 certified ombudsmen for each professional staff person. So we believe that we can increase our volunteer ranks, so that would increase our presence in facilities. We could increase thereby by increasing the number of program volunteers, and also increase our capacity to respond to assist for assistance. You know, we didn't talk specifically about our performance measures, but I tried to break out for you in those measures where staff was deviating in the performance measure in terms of our goals from the volunteers, so you could see what the volunteers were achieving with the staff. And we are a little concerned that the staff's ability, because of competing priorities, that they're not responding as quickly to some of the complaints, not resolving them as quickly as I'd like to see them resolved. And I really want to focus on that, and we believe that we could improve that as well.
The improvement, however, may not be adequate. I mean, you have struggled to keep up with the facility bed growth, and I'm not sure what the projected bed growth is. Your chart only takes it to 2006.
Madam Chair, Senator Gorley, you know, right now we have, you know, foster care homes have leveled off because they took a significant downturn in number with the advent of the tremendous growth in assisted living and residential care. Our nursing facilities have been at a static level for many years, and right now there's a moratorium on the development of, with some exception, of assisted living and residential care. If that moratorium were lifted, I would assume that there could be some significant growth accompanying that as well. But right now, there was a significant increase from probably the late 90s to the early 2000s, just a very significant increase in assisted living facilities right. In the state, in the number of those beds and residential care. And so, so I guess what I'm saying is that I would be more than happy, Senator Gorley, if you were to say to me, Meredith, you haven't asked for enough, and we really think you ought to have, you know, more staff. As always,
Meredith, you haven't asked for enough.
I appreciate that sentiment.
I really think it's important to say to this committee, you know, we really need to understand, frankly, from you, what the need is. I mean, in 17 years, you've been struggling to keep up with the growth. Your budget drivers, as you have described them and defined them on page, 27? Your budget drivers include the current and the increasing need of individuals 85 and older, which says something to me about what's going to happen to that current moratorium. So why ask for what you need to ask for what is needed yes. to serve this yes. population yes. Effectively? That's what I'm trying to
push you. Madam Chair, Senator Gorley, I so appreciate what you said, and I would certainly. I think that after several years of asking and trying to be very judicious in one's request, and not, the state not seeing that the resources, the state seeing that they wanted to use their resources elsewhere, at some point you do. You continue your modest requests, not ever thinking that your request would in any way be responded to. And I frankly, you know, when we were developing our policy action packages, we had a discussion, and I said, should I put it out there one more time that we absolutely need a couple of, at least some more professional staff? And we talked about that, and we did, and we were elated when the governor reported back to us that they wanted at this juncture to invest in our program. And so it's sort of that back and forth of not wanting to it's that history about you've sort of been rebuffed a number of times for all sorts of reasons, and I'm not going to suggest that other people's priorities are better than mine, are not as good as mine, but you get to a place where you try to be very modest and be able to ask for something that you think is reasonable and doable, and you hope that somebody's going to hear that.
I'll say this and then I'll be quiet, Madam Chair, but the resources not being there is one thing. The need, our really understanding what is the need is another piece. We always need to know what is the need, truly, what is the need. The choice, you know, what the legislature is going to do about that is another thing, but we need you to be forthright and tell us the painful truth.
Before we go to public hearing,
Tomorrow we work this budget and the scheme of things. So is there a dying question on the budget before we go to public hearing? We have people here for public hearing. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee.
Is that Jean Williams? Let me call Ms. Hubert up at the same time, Dolores Hubert. Did I pronounce your name right, Jane?
Jean Williams?
Dolores Hubert? Yeah.
Yes.
Let me ask you guys, because we only have about two minutes each for you. And don't consider me rude if I have to stop you in 2 minutes.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members, thank you for hearing me. I'm not going to be modest like Meredith. I've been in this program for 17 years, and I came in with four. 17 years later, there's four. We need four more. Never mind two and a bit more, and we need four. There's no doubt about that, to make it anything worthwhile. I know you understand what's going on by the questions you've asked. I never meant to say that, but I'll give you my presentation. As I say, I've been in this program for 17 years.
Introduce yourself for the record, too.
Jean Williams from Tiger. I've been on the advisory committee. This is my fourth term, and I was an ombudsman before that, till my back gave out. The deputies do the training, supervising, attend monthly support groups in each area with further mandatory trainings. One must stay in the office because you never know when somebody's going to say, my mother's in hospital and they said she's got to get out tomorrow. And then they can help and give advice. And this is the kind of thing that comes up daily. Really urgent, critical things for people. They help the ombudsman in anything that's difficult for them. Remember, these are volunteers. Highly trained, very professional, but there are still places where they cannot really go themselves. There's cases of guardianship and bills and all that kind of thing that they need help with. So that's what the deputies are there for. The state has been split into four. A deputy has been put in each area. They rotate that because sometimes they're away from home for several days because the areas are so large. Well, I was brought up in Scotland, from the Orkneys Hebrides in the north to the Channel Islands in the south. The whole of the British Isles will fit into Oregon 2.5 times. And you're asking four deputies to cover that area. You're used to Oregon, but for anybody else, that is a vast area. 2.5 times, and we've got four deputies. That is ludicrous. That really is shameful in a state that's supposed to be compassionate and caring of its aged. And remember how many more ages there are going to be presently. The boomers are coming in a couple of years. They'll be going into care, and the parents are still in care. It's getting to be crisis. There's people with dementia and Alzheimer's coming in earlier and earlier. It used to always be an old person's thing. Not anymore. So we have an awful lot of people waiting to go into care in a very short time. We've got to be prepared for this. This is Oregon. You know, you've got to think about that. I'm sorry. We need to visit at least once a week so that residents get to know who and trust the ombudsman. They will not confide in anybody that they don't know. And if it's only once a month, they're going to forget who that person was, and you're going to have to start all over again. You've got to come in at least once a week so the residents know you and trust you and know that you're going to be confidential in dealing with any cases that come along.
Jean?
Yes,
I'm being kind.
Finish?
Yes.
Please, please help us to help the helpless by giving some tools we need to do the job.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for hearing me.
Ms. Hooper? Chair Carter, representative, members of the committee. My name is Dolores Hubert, and I'm a resident of Multnomah County. Thank you for allowing me to testify, and I am a volunteer ombudsman with 15 years service. for residents in long-term care facilities. My role as an ombudsman is that of an advocate assisting these residents in long-term care with complaints and problem-solving. I regularly, on my caseload, visit 3 nursing homes, 4 residential care facilities, and 7 to 10 adult foster homes in the Gresham area. In addition to my regular assigned visits, I receive telephone calls in my home at all hours of the day and night and on weekends. Additionally, I respond to calls from the professional staff to do backup complaint work where there is no regularly assigned ombudsman. In the 15 years that I have volunteered, the range of issues has increased dramatically, from cold food and lost clothing to many more complex issues. Among them, and I think the biggest issue that I see, is the increase in guardian conservatorships. We also deal with family conflict, pain management, end-of-life evictions, financial exploitation, management problems, accounting errors, Medicaid eligibility, and a big issue that I had this last year was in heating and air conditioning. We had a facility where for 3 years we had residents during the summer who were having room temperatures of 95 degrees. And one particular night in August, I was able to go into that facility with a thermometer and an APS worker, and we calibrated each one of the rooms at 95 degrees, some were less than that. But as a result of that, we finally were able to have the provider put in a new heating and air conditioning system. The guardian and conservator issues, has dramatically increased in the last year with the necessity of my appearance and giving testimony in 3 contested cases in Multnomah County.
I have to stop you.
That's fine. I appreciate your time. Thank you very much. Our program really needs your assistance with additional deputies. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have time for a question?
We only have 3 minutes.
Okay, then I won't. I'll follow up with them later.
Okay. Bob Lawrence and Rick Bennett.
Madam Chair, can I bring my guest with me as well?
Yes, you see how much time we got?
I understand.
Okay.
I'm getting the nod to go first. Madam Chair, my name is Robert Lawrence, and I'm the legislative coordinator of the Governor's Commission. We are here in support of the budget of the Office of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman. Everything has been said about the lack of staffing since 1990 and the number of responsibilities that this office has. So my testimony is very brief. I can loan a minute to Rick Bennett. The commission is really finding it very difficult to understand why this one particular position was deleted by the co-chair's budget. This doesn't make any sense. For $134,000, we would get, which is not general fund all, it's a mix of funding from Medicaid and Old Americans Act. So we really have a difficult time understanding why that was cut from the governor's budget. For an additional position, I have that we can recruit, train, and oversee approximately 20 additional volunteer ombudsmen throughout the state. And I heard now that the supervisory span is 135. So the other benefit from this is that the volunteers really stay involved in the community, and we know that we're trying to increase volunteerism in the state. We also, one of the people that testified talked about the senior population that continues to grow, and the fastest growing population are the 85 plus, and they're presenting a challenge of complex acute care needs. So we're urging this, that the commission is urging that this position be restored in the budget. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Bennett?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Rick Bennett, Director of Government Relations for AARP. We support this program.
We are actively involved in recruiting volunteers from our membership. We've done so for quite some time. We think it's a well-managed program. It is addressing a significant need, but unfortunately there are limits to what the program can do without additional professional staff. With me is one of our AARP members who was in fact recruited through one of our mailings, and I'll allow any additional time I have to Sam. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Samuel Rice. I'm a resident of Multnomah County. I've been certified since December of 2003. I did get the mailing from AARP, and having had several years' experience as the Assistant Inspector General in an Army Division, I thought maybe I had a background that might apply to being able to do this. I currently have 307 beds that I'm responsible for servicing. We are asked when we volunteer to put in maybe 10 hours a month. I feel I slack when it's only 30. It's not unusual for it to be 50 or 60. And many of that is because I do a lot of backups. I'm fully retired and have the ability and the desire to do backups. I go to many facilities where the complaint is so great they called Salem. But just walking around on a visit, I see things that if there was a regularly assigned ombudsman, people who do not want to rock the boat, people who have thought that they were kind of an unrepresented part of the population and therefore are going to just accept whatever comes along, would have an advocate to improve their life. An example, a scooter was given to a woman by her grandson. The facility wouldn't let her use it because it didn't come from the health provider. Well, by my intervention, the corporate lawyer agreed she could use it. As a matter of fact, the number of complaints I did follow up on at that facility, there was a change of the staffing at the highest level by that corporation. Could have occurred a lot sooner had there been deputies who could support additional ombudsmen who could provide those services. And the range of services, they can be as minor as pointing out to the facility there should be a team from the elections office when they are assisting people to ballot. Voting, well, it does require somebody other than us looking over their shoulder. I've been able, because of my assignment and because of my support, at least to get a facility. Now, I very seldom report an abuse. They report the abuse before I have a chance to, because they know I'm going to do it if they don't. So the quality of that facility has been greatly increased by the awareness of the administration. And they come right out and say, because the ombudsman is there. So can you imagine what else we could do for other facilities around the state if there were the deputies who could train and support and provide the technical knowledge and insight to those people to be able to do that job? If they even be used today, that has a complaint that will go unanswered because there isn't enough staff, or at least one of your loved ones. So please support the request now, or if there is more money, that would be a place to put it. Thank you.
Representative Sotak, you had a quick question?
Oh, that's okay, Madam Chair. I'll follow up later.
Okay.
Thank you.
I appreciate very much this hearing today, and appreciate you coming today and giving us more insight.
Let me say, it was a privilege for me. I had two resident council meetings today. They thought this was more important, and I was actually devoted. I cannot put on aftershave lotion when I shave because I may be going into the facility. I get calls all the time. I've actually answered calls in New York City and Los Angeles and been able to resolve them on the cell phone.
Wow.
Because 24/7 we're available. Today I got to use aftershave lotion. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, members, thank you very much for staying the course. And we are about 7 minutes late, but thank you very much.
year, right, we're afraid of retaliation, you know. And I, you know,
Joint Committee on Ways and Means, the Education Subcommittee. It is Wednesday, April 18th, 2007, 3 p.m. in Hearing Room F.
Well, can the staff complain to us?